You know, oh, it's the start of something, hopefully.
This is the Garibaldi Gazette, a podcast about two-time European champions Nottingham Forest. On this episode, admin, change the password. Atwell, I guess those were some shocking decisions. And sharpen, take a breath. Manchester City next. That's tough. Hoping for 43 million views, this is the Garibaldi Gazette. And it is Wednesday, which is the day that Forest are having their appeal about their points deduction, but also Stuart Pearce's birthday. It's me and Arsha Ali with you today, by the way. Nick's on holiday. Arsha, I was absolutely devastated to learn that Stuart Pearce is 62 years old. That can't be a thing.
No way. He's not 62. No.
So.
You're telling me those thighs that Nick Miller always goes on about 62 years on this planet?
I mean, he looks good on it, to be fair. But yeah, I mean, the passage of time is something that's coming for us all, albeit quicker for some than others. I'm going to move on because I've no idea what I'm talking about here. Stuart Pearce, is he your favourite Forest player? I mean, for people of our age, he sort of has to be.
Yeah, definitely in terms of a character, like a huge captain character, you know, tub-thumping character. Yeah, absolutely.
Because we didn't get the best of Brian Clough, right? So he was the kind of guy that filled that void for us.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, those blonde curtains, you know, there's no one's ever pulled them off since.
What a man. We love you, Psycho. Have a very, very happy birthday. Right. You could maybe do us a favour, listener. Leave us a nice review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your pods. It's the best way for other Forest fans to find us. You can also follow us on X at the Garibaldi G, on Instagram at the Garibaldi Gazette. Same handle on YouTube as well. We're going to start today by listening to our friend David Marple's latest voice note opus. David was at Goodison Park on Sunday. He talks about the game and the incident.
Oh, the horror, the horror. Famous words uttered by Colonel Kurtz and Macduff. These dying words of Kurtz in Joseph Conrad's 1902 novel, The Heart of Darkness, express despair at the realisation that beneath an exterior of civilised human behaviour lies a potential and hunger for savagery. For Macduff, they express the shock at discovering Duncan's murder and the subsequent realisation that such a deed is an affront to God and the whole natural order of things. Leaving Goodison Park, we trudged disconsolately back to the car through Anfield Cemetery, its beautiful gravestones and monuments reminding us that everything is finite. We are but mortals, miraculously clinging to a rock in the emptiness of the seemingly infant cosmos. Of course, we must remember that it's just a stupid game which a stupid football club has lost again. We'd taken a chance and left a minute early. Neither prizes nor medals are given out for staying to the very bitter end. Friend A took his place in the back of the car, friend B in the passenger seat. An unearthly groaning noise came from the back seat from friend A, followed by, oh God, the despair evoking Kurtz and Macduff. He looked pale, too. For a second or two, I couldn't work out what had happened. Had we conceded another three in the final minute or something? Or maybe, just maybe, we had somehow managed to stage a miraculous comeback and maybe drawn or even won? And we'd missed it and would have to live with this, hence the horror. No, none of these. It was the statement. That statement. It's been a tough week. Season cards, FA Cup replays, losing against Everton. You know, all the usual stuff. And now, this solid block of pure idiosyncrasy from the club. The drive home just got interesting. It does sometimes feel that life is treating us wrong and everything is stacked against us and everyone has it in for us. But it's also true that on far too many occasions, we simply haven't been good enough to justify the whinging and the moaning emanating from the club. As much as I hold that we are something approximating as a semi-competent team, losing twice to Everton this season without scoring a goal says as much about us as any hastily constructed statement. It was a game there for the taking, given Everton's nervousness, which quickly manifested itself in the home crowd's simmering anxiety and frustration. But we lacked urgency and decisiveness. We seemed so preoccupied with not giving away free kicks and defending set pieces that we simply forgot to close players down, players who were running with the ball towards our goal, which caused us all kinds of problems. The home crowd seemed just as surprised at the opening goal as they were relieved. As a team performance and as a club afterwards, it was a collective act of self-sabotage, akin to Jerry Lundegaard from Fargo, a car salesman in Minneapolis, who hatches a plan to have his wife kidnapped to extort a large ransom from his wealthy father-in-law. Jerry's spiralling acts of self-destruction leads to an unending series of bad decisions, followed by more bad decisions. While the audience may start by sympathising with Jerry to a degree, a lost and desperate soul who doesn't really want to hurt anyone, but just feels that life has somehow reneged on what it promised him, he slowly loses the audience's goodwill, which transfers to local police chief Marge Gunderson, who quietly but effectively and without fuss gets on with the job of catching the bad guys and closing the net in on Jerry. Just in case you were wondering, Jerry is eventually arrested, and Marge blithely gets on with her seemingly uncomplicated and harmonious life. This is how things tend to work. Lord only knows what might have transpired between me clumsily articulating this and you hearing it on Wednesday. As we all saw last week, lots of things can happen in a typical week of this increasingly weird football club. It seems likely to deduce that the club will be charged with misconduct, that public sympathy with the club will be in increasingly short supply, that we will still be just one precarious point clear of Luton, and that we will face Manchester City in our next game. With each passing game, the stakes on us coming away from Bramall Lane with a result increase exponentially. And the thought of having to go to Burnley and get something in the last game fills me with, well, to come back to Kurtz and Macduff, horror. Or more specifically, despair at the realisation that should we go down, we will do so in the style of a petulant toddler having one of those epic meltdowns in the aisle of a supermarket while others look on, not quite knowing whether to point and laugh or stage some kind of much needed intervention. The horror, the sheer horror of it all.
Before we deal with the social media stuff, Arsha, my analysis of this was that Forest played quite poorly in this game and probably didn't deserve anything from it. Is that fair or harsh?
Yeah, I think so. And also, since we've been back in the league, we've not actually beaten Everton. So that was kind of like, that kind of thing never goes our way, you know, and a commentator always goes, something has happened, you know, it hasn't happened in a long time. And you always go, oh, so that's going to happen for the other team. It always seems to be that way. But no, they were poor before we get to all the other stuff. Two goals that, you know, quite disappointing, really. Kind of midfield just wasn't there at all. There was absolutely no pressure on the ball, and there was just no one kind of shielding the defence. Everybody else has talked about this, I know, and an off day for Morgan Gibbs-White and Chris Wood. There were two good chances there that they, you know, could have put away on another day. But no, poor. Not really much to kind of say, really.
We had 60% possession, which feels weird for Forest in any kind of game, but an away game, even less so. As David said in his voice note, though, to lose both games to Everton without scoring is really not very good. But that is not what people were talking about after this match. If you aren't one of the 43 million who've viewed the tweet Evangelos Marin admin posted shortly after full time on Sunday, it read, three extremely poor decisions, three penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept. We warned the PGMOL that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. NFFC will now consider its options. We hear that they actually wanted to put that out at half time, which would have been pretty spectacular. We'll deal with what they tweeted afterwards because it got a bit better. But what was your initial reaction, Arsha, when you saw this? I mean, they're not even tweets anymore, are they? They're posts, if we're being pedantic. But
I'm
this
still going to call
spin
them.
fire.
Yeah, I'm still going to call them tweets. I just want to start off with this. So, a photo tweet from Rihanna of her baby. A tweet from Taylor Swift announcing a secret double album darkly titled The Tortured Poets Department. A tweet from Nottingham Forest proclaiming VAR is a Luton fan. Rank those in views.
Rihanna number one.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of thought Taylor would be number one because she's got such a loyal army. But are her followers as acolyte like as some of Evangelos Marinakis? That's the key. Tell me.
Forest was second.
Wow.
So they couldn't even win that. They don't win. They don't win on Twitter. They don't win on the pitch. It's up there, 44 million, rounding it off, right? That's how many times it's been. I can't believe it. Taylor Swift, that tweet at 2 a.m. or whatever she did, 41 million. Rihanna's baby, 47 million.
Wow.
That's the illustrious company we're in. That's the hugely popular, culturally iconic company we are in.
So we're up to 44 million for that tweet. I
Ish.
mean, the ones that came afterwards were much more kind of measured, I think. Forest today submitted a formal request to the PGMOL to release into the public domain the audio recordings, blah, blah, blah. We firmly advocate for the broader football community and supporters to have access to audio and transcript for full transparency. Now, what we should say is that at least two of those calls should have been penalties. And what I will add is that Stuart Atwell is an atrocious referee. You can go all the way back to 2009 when he gave a goal when the ball didn't go anywhere near the net, and he hasn't got much better since then. Is it fair enough for Forrest to ask for the audio of that conversation, or have they just totally undermined their whole argument by alleging corruption?
Yeah, they have. They've completely undermined it. That first tweet was the one you don't tweet, was the one you think about. That second tweet was slightly better. And then the third one was just sort of mansplaining. They do have legitimate gripes. They have had legitimate gripes this entire season, it feels like. But the way you go about it and how you sort of address those has been completely wrong. Like, completely wrong. I mean, the funny thing about all this as well is that they really, at the beginning, their whole rhetoric was that we're winners. Everything we do, we are winners. We win at this, we win at that, we win with Olympiacos. That's what we want to do at Forest. This is not how winners act. This is no way. This winners have class. Winners, like in the face of
We were going to be like
prestige.
Arsenal, weren't we? That was the whole basis.
Yeah. What was that? We were supposed to sort of be
Classic.
We were going to be built on the sort of old school Arsenal, classic Arsenal virtues and everything. That's just not there. That crying, about these kind of things in the way they have, it really, you've got to find another way. You've got to find something. You just got to be smarter with what you're doing here. Like, surely, like, that just doesn't. Again, that kind of, we've talked about this so many times, and I feel like it's a broken record. That kind of victim mentality that we've put on ourselves, it really isn't going to help us, And at the end of the day, the Premier League, at the end of the day, the Premier League, it's a global TV show. It is. It's like Friends with football. Everyone watches it. And you can't tell me that if you've got like 20 cast members, and if two or three of them are really kicking off and causing a stink, they're not going to find a way to sort of get rid of you eventually. I don't know. I mean, there's just so much to say about this, and I'm sort of overwhelmed. Like, I it's it, but all of it sort of, without an agenda, this is just personal. All of this is just really kind of like added to the feeling that I have of general kind of no confidence in this ownership for a multitude of reasons, some of which I'm not stupid enough to share on here, and some of it is already out in the public domain. I'm not quite sure why our fan base is it sort of feels a bit divided as well. I know we're going off in a rabbit hole here, but this is what this kind of stuff does to fans. we're sort of divided. There's a sort of fan base that, doesn't have any kind of, or doesn't want to have any kind of critical thinking in terms of looking at the 7 odd years. It's nearly 7 years, I think, that Maranakis is, and everyone has been here. But sort of looking at, the whole run, and sort of, if you looked at the whole run, you wouldn't be surprised by something like this. Like, to sort of, for us, this tweet wasn't a surprise, was it? For the wider football world, it was like, oh my God, look at those crazy people. Oh, they've lost it. But for us, it was like, oh great, he's got the password. I mean, I don't even know where to go in what I'm saying right now. I just feel so upset and distanced from this club. And I would say that I feel more distanced and more upset than I did under Fawaz Al-Hassawi, because even then, like, it felt like we were together, and it felt like that there was something we could do about it, any kind of perceived failings in looking after the club, et cetera, et cetera. But just now, it feels like we're under a kind of tyranny, and I don't like that. I don't like that it feels like it is, the kind of, in every sense of that word, power through one man. And a tweet like that really, really does hammer that home to me. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I definitely felt for some of the staff who would have been around that and feel like they kind of had to do it when they knew it wasn't a good idea. I think it's sad that we've gone from everybody saying, isn't it great to have Forest back in the Premier League? Wow, they've got a really good atmosphere at the City Ground these days, to the banter club, which is what we've become, which is the last thing that you want to be in the Premier League or the Championship or wherever you are. On the specific issue of the audio being released, it strikes me like the Premier League would be better off just putting it into the public domain, right? Because then Forest can just spin it into whatever they want, because if it's not released publicly. I mean, we are rightly critical of the decisions that the club have been making, and they have made some absolute howlers, this being the pinnacle of them. But there is a kernel of a decent argument here, in that the way that refereeing is administered in the Premier League and is governed seems opaque at best and sort of wrong at worst.
Yeah, it's quite draconian, isn't it? It's all kind of, all happening in the offices and in the sort of shady, locked off rooms, the VAR room. No fighting in the VAR room. It just feels like, where does this stop? Like, I think it was an April Fool's joke that somebody put up about VAR being introduced to the Championship next year. That was like vomit inducing. Just in case we do end up going down there, at least you can sort of escape VAR for a second, and get our sort of bearings together. But I remember reading that tweet and thinking, oh my God, that's it. Football is over. If you're going to bring VAR into the Championship, it's over. You've got to release it publicly. We've all got to hear contextually what is happening. You can't allow any more spin on this, and you can't allow any more kind of emotional immaturity, really, around all this. But again, we're dealing with someone who is used to having his own way in Greece. He owns a lot of media over there. He can control the message quite easily. This is all in the public domain. I'd point you to Danny Taylor's article. I think it was last year, the one he did about Maranakis. Some great stuff in there. So this is all out there. But he is someone who's used to kind of controlling the message. So it would be good if it was public before. But I think the way it's going now, or what I read, is it's going to go privately between the clubs, and we'll see whatever, comes out the other side of that. But where does this end? Those are parallels that are quite dark and are quite scary, with the kind of parallels to how this ownership views refereeing and decisions that they perceive to go there against them in Greece. We've seen that's quite a dark place now in terms of refereeing in Greece, and the major clubs over there, and their response to what's going on over there is really, you wouldn't think it here. Like, where does that end? I just want to read something that Yanis Frentros said at the time. I think it was maybe last year or the year before, when they were really in all of this kind of, all Greek football's being run by so and so, and it's a kind of conspiracy. This is what he said. He says it's clear that Greek football is being run by a fascist regime governed by illegality and organized crime. Our tolerance today is coming to an end. My proposal is for Olympiakos to withdraw from the Greek League and at the same time appeal to the Greek courts, where the extent of corruption in Greek football will be highlighted. Like, how far are we from seeing something like that on our account, you know, coming through the mouthpieces? You know, and it's just bonkers. Like, if think about that statement, it's absolute. It's just so just unprofessional, and just no, there's no reason to it. It's a complete lack of intelligence, and papers over a lot of things. Like what we're doing now is papering over some huge cracks, you know. And like one of those is that this isn't a well thought out team or coaching staff or, you know, front office or whatever. And also that this is conveniently skated over the season ticket for Aure as well, you know, and having fans are literally footing the bill for all the mistakes that the ownership have made over the last few years. I mean, that is grim. Because I remember when they first came in, one of their first things they did, which was great PR, was they slashed, I swear they did, they slashed ticket prices when they first came in. You know, which was like, oh yeah, great. You know, where's that spirit gone?
Yeah, it's a tangled old web, and we are in a lot of trouble. But hey, we can focus on matters on the pitch next because we've got a nice easy game coming up this weekend. Eek, Forest taking on the champions Manchester City on Sunday. There won't be any Forza displays, but presumably somebody is repurposing old bed sheets as we speak to make a transparent VAR process now banner. Looking forward to seeing that. How can we get any positivity ahead of this one, Asha? I mean, we did hold them last season, and they do look knackered, to be fair, Manchester City. So maybe this isn't the worst time in the world to be playing them, but we have won twice in 2024, so maybe it is.
Yeah, I don't think there's a good time to play Man City. I know they've had a lot of football. But just to go back to Forza, I've got nothing but respect and love for Matt and Greg and what you know all those everyone involved has done, and I've supported them and I will continue to support them. But when I read their statement, you know, that bit about we're going to withdraw TIFOs, you know, even though it might seem like a bit of a sort of an empty thing, it's not an empty thing. That's a great thing. You know, that Forza and the spirit they have is the kind of spirit and heart that you would have expected the supporters trust to have, which they patently just haven't. You know, I remember being involved in the supporters trust early on, very early on, and I got, you know, a sort of feeling that this was going to be a group that, you know, of people who just wanted to kind of mostly be ingratiated with the club and sort of, you know, the novelty of being involved in boardrooms was fun to them. That aside, let's get back to Manchester City. I mean, that game last year was quite exciting, wasn't it? You know, and again, who's there and who popped up with the goal and who's in decent form? You know, against Everton, obviously it wasn't great, but he had an off day, and so did Morgan Gibbs-White. But in terms of the run-in, in terms of our run-in and other teams' run-ins, you know, if you can get a draw from this, amazing. But I can't see it. Can you?
Well, they are 29 games unbeaten if you take out penalty shootouts, Manchester City, which is quite impressive. So, as it stands going into the weekend, Burnley, and we've got to consider them now, they've got 23 points, albeit their goal difference is horrendous and they have tricky games to finish. They are 19th. Luton are 18th. They've got 25. Their goal difference is also 10 worse than Forest. So, that could be a factor. Forest are a point better off. I mean, you can effectively call that 2 points better off because of that. We're recording before Everton host Liverpool in the Merseyside Derby on Wednesday night. They've got 30. Who knows? Forest might get a point or two back from their appeal as well. Big this weekend. Everton at home to Brentford. Luton away to Wolves. Burnley at Manchester United. I mean, we're going to need what, at least 4, probably 5 points from the remaining game. So we can't just write this off and say, oh, well, it's Manchester City. I mean, I would fancy us to beat Chelsea and Sheffield United, but not that strongly.
No, and Burnley as well. There's a slight spectre of Burnley. It sent shivers down my spine seeing the company fist bumps after their win on the weekend. It was a bit like, oh no, this is what it's like when, you know, a team and the fan base are all together and they're sort of fighting for something. Remind you of anyone
But they've got
from
Man
this year?
United, Newcastle, Spurs, and then us. I mean, if they get
Yeah.
to the time they play us, if they've got even a point from those three games, I think they'd be pretty pleased with that.
Yeah, I think it's more the last game, you know, of us against them is there's the really sort of one that's sort of bum clenching.
We're hoping they're down by that point, basically.
Yeah, oh my God, could you imagine? I'm sure we'd still find a way to ruin it. I don't know, like just to go back to that Vincent Kompany thing, like that's a personality. There's a personality there, it feels like. Do you get that from Nuno, really? Or Nuno Bot, as I like to call it. It just feels like he has all the kind of personality of a kind of like just like a rubbish Terminator that was sent back to do like a really kind of menial job. You know, like he was like a Terminator that's sort of been sent back to like put a can of beans back on the shelf because like someone involved in low-level AI tripped over that can of beans and died. And it meant that they didn't have like, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It's just like he just seems like a really robotic, uninspiring guy. Like I can't see him doing the Al Pacino speech. You know, you need to be able to see someone in, you know, at least have a sort of 40% Al Pacino, especially in this kind of running. I just don't see it. And I'm not quite sure what we've got from him in terms of a change. And everyone will know that obviously I'm someone who didn't want to see Steve Cooper go and thought he should have been given more of a chance. But also that was, you know, the mess behind the scenes between Cooper and the ownership was something that was probably just unsustainable anyway. But you know, what have we seen? We've not really got the defensive resolve I thought we were going to get. Did you think we were going to get, you know, sort of we were going to be shored up at the back? That hasn't really come, you know. And again, like you just said earlier, like two wins in however many games. I think it's like four, or is it like the whole of 2024?
It
I think
is,
so far we've not, you know, we've only won two games. How has he been immune from any kind of appraisal or any kind of pressure? It just feels really odd. Of all these things that have been happening over the last few weeks, this feels so off-brand for someone like Marinakis to sort of let this kind of mediocrity slide for as long as it has. So I don't know. I don't know what the reasoning is behind that. I don't know what the influence is in terms of Jorge Mendes. Are we beholden to him? I don't know. Like this, it seems like, you know, with their track record of both clubs, you know, Olympiacos and Forest, a manager like this, history would tell you that they would just get rid of him. Look at Corberan, look at, you know, Victor Sanchez, the guy that they were going to have at Forest and then rerouted to Olympiacos. You know, he lasted like however long, 40 something days, whatever, you know. So it does seem odd, but obviously, like, we've got bigger fish to kind of fry at the moment. So you're hoping that the players can just sort of find it in themselves. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not massively confident, put it that way.
Yeah, I think the best we can say for Nuno at the moment is that he's been a useful buffer between Steve Cooper and the next guy and whatever division we're in next season. He ought not to be in charge because he looks demotivated by it and the results just haven't been good enough, basically.
But
So,
who comes in? Who comes in afterwards? Like it feels
well,
like I'm
that's
really
entirely
bringing a.
dependent on the division, isn't it? You can't really have that discussion until you know which league you're going to be in, which is probably why he's still in a job now because you wouldn't get somebody of the requisite quality who wants to
I
manage the
guess I wasn't
championship.
sort of asking you for a name. I guess I'm thinking more of like the kind of profile, as they like to say in modern football speak. What kind of profile of manager? And I'm sorry to sort of feel like I'm really bringing everyone on a downer. Sorry, guys. Sorry. But who comes in like and wants to work for this ownership, given history, basically? I don't know who comes in other than a kind of either someone who's worked with them before or someone who, you know, just sort of is a little bit someone who doesn't quite have the mouth to speak back. A yes man, basically. Like I don't know who comes in, but then as long as they're in charge, there's always like a sort of thing in me that thinks that Marco Silva might end up. Yeah, I don't know why. I just you can see it, and I wouldn't be too unhappy with that. I mean, obviously that's just one piece. You know, the rest of the picture I'm still quite unhappy with, or whatever, or just have questions, or you know, want to kind of engage in kind of critical thinking. But Marco Silva, No, I'd absolutely take him. But again, like you said, that's all just hypothetical. We don't know what league we're going to be in, you know. And if we go down, can we attract a kind of Will Still? I don't know. Would he want to work for someone like this? Not him per se specifically, but like that type, you know, the young, ambitious type who have a plan that an ownership would kind of go, do you know what? We're going to let you do your thing. Like the kind of Steve Cooper thing happened, you know, that was kind of like, oh, look, he's building something here. Are we going to get someone like that with this kind of ownership, the volatile emotional ownership? I don't know.
Yeah, it's either that or 30 something currently in charge of Borussia Dortmund's B team, bright white Stan Smith's funky glasses, comes over for a year and then goes somewhere better. Anyway, we might be stuck with Nuno. Who knows? Good luck to Forest on Sunday, though. We're not really at the point where we can write off games, so getting something would be absolutely ginormous from that. It has been a pretty downbeat episode. So before we go, let's finish by talking about some funny goals. Asher, I've got this in mind because we're playing City. And of course, that is the Gary Crosby, Andy Dibble game.
Oh, and Crosby's pinched the. Oh, has he given the goal? He has! My word! Gary Crosby! And Dibble is livid! Well, the ball was only resting on one hand. Was it in his grasp? The referee said no.
It's weird that that hasn't happened more, right? Because that was in 1990, and goalkeepers still do that quite regularly, where they just have the ball out in one hand. But how come no nippy little winger has headed it off them and then put it in the net while the goalkeeper stamps his feet and shouts at the referee? It was a glorious moment.
It was his indignation that's what made it, you know, and a decent kit as well. I quite liked that Man City kit. But yeah, I'm surprised you don't see it more. But I guess a lot of keepers actually don't do that one-handed thing anymore, do they? You know, they're quite quick. And also the time, you know, between dropping the ball and them absolutely hoofing it, you know, on that low arc is quite quick. But I don't know, maybe just everyone seems to be a lot kind of fairer, and they want to sort of engage in the, you know, playing it the right way, sort of like a sort of a spirit of the game, you know, cricket type thing coming over into football. I don't know, but it was a funny goal.
Any other funny Forest goals of yore that come to mind?
I think Nathan Tyson, if anyone remembers Nathan Tyson against Norwich, I can't remember who the Norwich goalkeeper was, but I remember that goal because he absolutely clattered it against Nathan Tyson's ass from sort of outside the box. And it went in. That's quite funny. I've got to put Yates's own goal in there against Middlesbrough. That was funny because we can sort of laugh about it now because we got promoted. But at the time, it was just, what were you doing? Like, and Samba's reaction is just brilliant. But also Chris Commons in the 5-2. Now, I love Chris Commons, like most of us did. I really loved him. And the betrayal I felt, also I was much younger back then, so I was, you know, there wasn't much going on, so I was allowed to feel things this much, but the betrayal that I felt when he went to Derby was like, it's just too much. But that goal he scored, because I remember the lower Brian Clough, and well, just the whole Brian Clough probably like was giving him a stick, you know. It wasn't particularly PC stick, shall we say. It was sort of we'll leave it at that. But he scored a goal and he just celebrated like so wildly in front of us. It really pissed us off. And he was kissing the badge. He was giving it all, oh, look at my name. This is my name. This is my team now and all that. But it was funny because it was 4-2. You're celebrating wildly and it's only 4-2. And we go on to win that game 5-2. I don't know. I just thought that was really funny. And just the image of him doing all that for just not much is quite funny.
I'm going to give a shout out to the Barry Roach Coffee Cup one because, again, we enough times passed now that we can laugh at one of our goalkeepers being beaten by a coffee cup. I also had the David Johnson one against Norwich, which is kind of like a poor man's Crosby, wasn't it? When Rob Green throws it out and he comes in and scores. But I think the winner for me is Paul McGregor following in that penalty against Lyon, but Colin Cooper then colliding with the post. Season review 95-96 VHS. That got rewound an awful lot because at that kind of age, what would I have been? 13, 14, something like that. Man, crashing into something was just endlessly funny. And again, we knew that he was okay. We won the game. I just kept rewinding it. He's just crashed into the boat. I was there. I was at the game, but didn't see it live at the time. But what a time to be alive.
Flattered. Much simpler times. Mm. Much simpler times.
Good old Colin Cooper. Right, that'll just about do it for today. Remember, if you would be so kind to leave us a nice review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your pods, follow us on X at the Garibaldi G, on Instagram at the Garibaldi Gazette, and the same handle on YouTube. We should be back with another show next week. Who knows what will have happened in the world of Nottingham Forest and social media since then. Hey, maybe we'll get all four of our points back. We'll have beaten Manchester City. We'll be safe for another season. And Mark Clattenburg will have been shown the door. We can but hope. Right, that's it then. See you next time. Bye for now.